the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly see us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
So, are we going to talk about it?
What?
The elephant in the room.
What elephant?
Mom's new job.
It's time to make some wrong things right. Help me bring supers back into the sunlight. We need to change people's perceptions about superheroes, and Elastigirl is our best play.
Better than me?
Whoa! I like Mom's new job! Bye, sweetie.
I'll watch the kids, no problem.
That's not the way you're supposed to do it, Dad. They want us to do it this way.
I don't know that way. Why would they change math? Math is math.
Okay,
math,
Dad.
Is math. Hello?
Hey, honey.
How are the kids?
Everything's great.
Is she having adolescence?
And Jack-Jack?
He's in excellent health.
Oh, what the?
Num-num cookie.
Oh, my God.
Cookie.
Whoa, okay. That is freaky.
You know it's crazy, right? To help my family, I gotta leave it. To fix the law, I gotta break it.
You've got to, so our kids can have that choice.
Thank you, young man.
That is the trailer for the movie's Incredibles 2, the sequel to its predecessor 14 years ago, just came out. And as promised, we are going to review that movie in the next half hour with Pastor Ted Gee. Some of our listeners had concerns about the movie. Did it harbor a feminist agenda? Did it harbor maybe even, as many of the animated films now do, subtle tip of the hat toward the LGBTQ agenda? Pastor Ted Geese joins us to review the movie Incredibles 2. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
We talked recently reviewing the movie The Incredibles in advance of its sequel, and some of our listeners expressed some concerns about the sequel, maybe that there might be a feminist agenda at work in it, or perhaps even an LGBTQ agenda lurking in the background. Were those concerns warranted?
Not really, I don't think. I mean, the concerns are warranted for sure. I mean, I think that it's good to be concerned about the potential of these things happening. What you get, though, in this film is that that's not the predominant thing that's going on in the film. In fact, it's not really even going on at all. So if we take those apart, the LGBTQ part, there really are no characters that, like, they don't push that agenda in any overt way or even a subtextual way. I have one thought about that, but then we'll talk about that in a second, maybe. I don't know. But the other thing, the feminist part of it, is perhaps if somebody watched this film in isolation, you know, what you do have is you have the mother character, Helen Parr, who's Elastigirl. She ends up being the one that goes and gets a job, essentially, and then Bob Parr, the husband, the father, Mr. Incredible, stays home with the kids. So this could kind of look like a feminist agenda, perhaps, in that way. But if you watch this film and you watch the other film, what you have here is kind of like a companion, complementary films. In the first film, it's the mother who comes to help rescue the father when, like, the wife that comes rescuing the husband when he's in trouble. And in this film, it's the husband, the father who comes to rescue the wife and mother when she needs help. So they're actually together as a family, husband and wife and kids. They're stronger as a unit when they all work together. And I think that when you take a step back and look at these films, that's the good thing that you can come away with. Plus, just the idea of the heroic nature of parenthood, like to take care of kids is a heroic task in and of itself. So that really, in the particulars, you might think that there's a kind of a feminist agenda, but if you take a step back and look at the whole thing, it comes clearer that it's more focused on the family as a unit together and how they help each other in their vocations.
Are we going to have any spoilers in our conversation today?
Oh, sure. That's what happens. So, I mean, like, it's hard to not spoil some things in order to talk about them, I think. And particularly, there are some things we need to talk about for families with little kids. And in that way, we'll kind of have to spoil a couple things, too.
Okay, so the plot here in its bare outlines?
In the bare outlines is it picks up right where it left off. So if you remember The Incredibles, the first one, there's kind of a hook at the end where this character of Underminer has shown up and he's a mole man who's attacking the city. And that's where it starts. It starts right there. So it doesn't matter that 14 years have gone past in computer animation. You don't have to worry about that. It just picks up immediately where it left off. And they attempt to save the city and capture Underminer. He gets away. And in the, you know, they're still illegal. The superheroes are illegal. So they get arrested. They find out that the government program to relocate them, kind of like a witness protection program, has been discontinued, and they're basically down their luck. They get set up for a couple of weeks in a motel, and they don't have anything coming down the pipeline, so they know that one of the parents has got to get a job. So it turns out that a job is offered to Elastigirl, Helen the mom, and she takes it, and she's offered the job from these wealthy kind of tech mogul, a brother and a sister, Winston and Evelyn Dever, and they offer her a job to try to sway public opinion about superheroes. So then he stays at home and she goes off to do this because she doesn't cause as much damage to public property, essentially. That's her thing. She can get the job done without smashing as many things. And then, of course, there is a villain in there, and you got to figure out who the villain is. And there's a separation anxiety, and the, you know, Mr. Incredible has to deal with the kids, which he's not used to. That's what you kind of get. And in the end, it all comes together and they save the day.
You say that there's a question raised here for Christians in this film about obedience to laws.
Well, this is kind of an interesting part of the film, really, because in the first film, Mr. Incredible, Bob, his day job, as it were, was to work in an insurance company in a cubicle. And, you know, it was not fulfilling work for somebody with superpowers, right, as a potential superhero. And he has to have that job because it's illegal for him to be doing superhero work. There are literally laws against doing superhero work in this context of this movie. So, but in this film, what you have is the mother gets this job to be a superhero. So she's being an advocate for superheroes. So in a sense, she's being given a job where she has to break the law to change the law. Because the idea is that if people could see what she actually does with the body camera on her, then public opinion would change such that they'd be able to get the law changed. That's, and these characters of Winston and Evelyn, the brother and sister, their parents were big supporters of the superheroes in the past, and they want to bring that back. So, you know, some movies like this might just like skirt past the whole question of, you know, the legality of it, but this movie brings up the question. So the teenage daughter, the junior high school age daughter, Violet, asks, what exactly is Mom's new job? And her father says, she's an advocate for superheroes. And then Violet says, but I thought superheroes were still illegal. So they bring up this, and he doesn't really have a good answer for it. And even Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible, as they're talking about it, as husband and wife, she's like saying, you know, it's kind of crazy that I've got to, you know, to fix the law, I've got to break it. So this brings up this question. And I think that for Christians, it's a good question to bring up, because sometimes there are laws that are passed that just go against God's law. They're unjust laws. So this is a good opportunity for parents to talk to kids about, in their own family, about what makes a law just or what makes a law unjust. You know, when it's in line with what God's law says, it's a just law. When it's out of line with what God's law says, then it's an unjust law. So then the question is, how do you go about changing it? And there are all sorts of different ways of doing that. But however you go about doing it, if you think of what Scripture says, St. Peter says that we must follow God's law and not man's law. There's that. So, and then also you have in Romans, St. Paul talking about all authority is from God. So then if you're going to go against a law, you have to wonder, you have to make sure that it is unjust. And then depending on the way that you go about it, you have to be prepared to take your lumps. And maybe you have to come up against it in a courageous way, a heroic way. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be like this fictional superhero kind of scenario, but it's a good way to get the conversation started. Take advantage of that with this film and run with it afterwards. I think that that's a good area to have a fruitful conversation.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Incredibles 2 when we come back. There's a theme that I see in this one. Actually, maybe Incredibles started the theme and it bled over into other superhero movies, the live-action movies like the Avengers, and that is that these superheroes, rather than simply swooping in and saving the day, may be more harmful than good. They may be dangerous. They may be vigilantes, and they answer to no one. We'll talk about that with Pastor Ted Geese right after this.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Whether you're a man yourself or a woman who cares about the men in your life, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Join John Kleinig, Hans Feeney, Jeffrey Hammer, Broer Erickson, and others in this power-packed issue on men at church as they explore toxic masculinity, godly fatherhood, the religious gender gap, and more. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue and our website is redeemerchico.org.
40 Years Greatly Blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at EdGruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are reviewing the movie Incredibles 2. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Men at Church is the theme of the June and July issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine. It's available in both print and electronic formats. Find out more at cph.org/witness. Interpreting the Contemporary World from a Lutheran Perspective, the Lutheran Witness magazine, cph.org/witness. Ted, there's a theme that I think maybe started 14 years ago with The Incredibles. I think they might have been the first superhero movie to explore it, and that is, and we see it now in The Avengers, it's a major feature of The Avengers saga, and that is that if superheroes really existed and they were able to do the things they do, they would be pretty destructive to our to our way of life, buildings falling down, smashing things everywhere they go. And the conclusion that I found in both The Avengers and in The Incredibles pair of movies is that people would kind of regard superheroes as more harm than good, as dangerous, as vigilantes, as answering to no one. This is kind of a new chapter. And I think it's actually The Incredibles who introduced it before anybody else did in the first movie. It's kind of a new chapter in the way we're kind of telling the stories of these superhuman beings.
Yeah, you know, and I had originally missed this when it first came out, the first Incredibles movie. Like, I didn't see it in the theater, and it just wasn't something I had seen until we watched it. I watched it for talking about it with you guys and then with everybody and then in advance of this film. And it really does, if we just stop right here where we are, it's the first bookend on the bookend, and in between we have everything else. And it is really kind of an interesting thing. Like, I, like, how many times I've watched movies like this, like the Man of Steel film about Superman, like just the sheer volume of destruction and me thinking to myself, there's insurance adjusters and contractors and people that got to deal with that crap afterwards. These are the kinds of thoughts I have. And then to have this film and the previous film kind of dealing with that it's really interesting. And I think that it goes a long way in terms of an opportunity to talk with kids about what are you willing to sacrifice in order to arrive at what you need to arrive at? Like, what level of destruction is okay? You know, is this a kind of an ends justify the means kind of a scenario, or are there more careful ways in which you can also fulfill God's law? You know, if you're thinking about like protecting your neighbor's property and income, you might also want to make sure you don't like bust it all up. So this is a fascinating area to think about, and these two movies give an opportunity to think about it.
Do you? I'm just going to ask you this question because it occurs to me. Do you think that big question about the mass destruction wreaked by superheroes, well-intentioned designs to save the world, that question actually kind of grew out of the terrorist attacks on 9/11, that we saw what mass destruction actually looks like? We realized this isn't a movie, and movie makers who were going to tell these stories say, we got to deal with that issue.
Well, that had such an imprint on the minds of people. And even if kids are born after it and didn't remember it happening, it's kind of permeated and saturated the society we live in at the time that we live in it. So yeah, I think it is. I think that those questions didn't seem as real. Like, you could like bust up buildings and things before that. Think of like a movie like Independence Day, like where the aliens come and they blow up the White House and they blow up some buildings in New York City, Empire State's building, stuff like that. It was a spectacle, but it wasn't realistic in any way. And since then, of course, we've had this experience where it's like we have a taste of what that actually really is like. And some people have like the bitter ashes of it right in their mouth. So it makes a big difference, I think, that you have to approach these things, or, you know, wise filmmakers approach these things maybe not as glibly or as nonchalantly as they could have in a cavalier fashion before.
So how does Incredibles 2 answer the question of kind of the good of being a nation of laws versus the greater good?
Well, by the end of it, spoiler alert, they reverse the law. So if there's a additional, that probably would be, I don't know if we'll have to wait another 14 years, but there'll probably be another one of these films. But that film will be one in which superheroes don't have a law restricting them or curtailing them. So I don't know where it's going to go exactly with that question, but there's a bunch of different thoughts on it. It's like there's other things kind of connected to it too. It's like the greater good. Well, whose hands is the greater good in? Like, who do we trust with this? There's a line in the movie too where it talks about politicians. There's the fellow who helped out kind of in the background with the witness protection program or the superhero relocation program that they were in. He says that, you know, politicians get nervous when it comes to people who do good things just because it's right. And that kind of gets in a little bit towards what you're talking about. Like, the whole question about the greater good is an important question, because this is one of these movies where you've got good guys and bad guys, and you have right and wrong, and they're fighting with each other. And, you know, good's supposed to come out on top. But in a society that we've got now, where basically what is counted as good is being dismantled, you have to ask, you know, like, what is the moral compass of these characters? And the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's rather vague. And what he's cleverly doing, it's a good marketing ploy, is that he's kind of sidestepped a bunch of the, you know, polarizing political stuff that's going on and produced characters, heroes that everybody can glom onto. And this notion of an unjust law, you can have people on completely different spectrums of the political spectrum looking at this and going, I know an unjust law. So you'll have some people looking at it and go, well, Roe versus Wade needs to be overturned, right? And you'll have another person looking at it and saying, you know, like, boy, we need more and more laws to protect and enshrine LGBTQ related things into our culture, because that is a group of people who have been treated unjustly. So the question is, what greater good is the greater good? What does good mean? And maybe people would be able to, because of the vagueness of what the underpinnings of all of it are in this film, they would be able to project their moral compass onto these characters, which makes it have a broad appeal. But people have got to remember that when they go into the theater and afterwards when they talk to their kids. It's kind of like, well, in our house, this is what we believe. As for me and my house, I will follow the Lord. I will trust the Lord. I think that's towards the greater good. That is the question underneath the question towards that end.
We're reviewing the movie Incredibles 2. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and he's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. When we come back, another concern that was raised by our listeners last week when we reviewed The Incredibles was the role of the baby, Jack-Jack, who at times, well, transforms into something very closely resembling a demon baby. We'll talk about that after this. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. The Issues Etc. 300.
LCMS National Housing Corporation is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During June, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to LCMS National Housing Corporation. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Confessions of a Well-Intentioned Preacher. It details how I mistakenly ignored or explained away entire parts of Scripture in order to protect my hearers from legalism. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Lyman Stone writes about the certainty he found in the presence of Christ in his word and sacraments, the free online Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Incredibles 2. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Ted, another one of our listeners had a concern about the role of the baby in the family, Jack-Jack, who appears to have all kinds of superpowers, including the ability to transform into some sort of demon baby. And that was perhaps a concern of at least one of our listeners. What can we expect of Jack-Jack's powers and what we know about them in the second movie?
Yeah, that's an interesting element of it. Like, I remember that question, and I think the question was, should there be an exorcism? And the answer is yes. This gets to what I was just talking about, is that really what Jack-Jack needs is to be baptized. So, like, in the first film, you have, like, Mr. and, you know, Incredible and Elastigirl at the altar getting married at the beginning of the film, or near the beginning of the film. But really, like, religion doesn't really play a part too much. And that would maybe help with that underpinning that some people would want to see, like, in terms of what is the moral compass of these characters. And you know, the fact that, you know, they're a little fast and loose with the OMGs in a couple spots, which is not that great for a kid's movie. But you've got this little kid, this little baby who does do lots of things. He shoots laser beams from his eyes. He's flammable. He walks through glass and through other things. He goes into different dimensions. He multiplies. But one of the things that happens is he erupts into this little demon baby, and it happens when he's not getting his way. So if there's something that he really wants and he can't get it, in frustration, all of a sudden this demon baby comes out. So it's a kind of a classic tantrum, but it's you know, because it's computer animation, they can do this thing with the superpowers, and he turns into this little monster. And when I saw that, I thought that it was a good illustration for original sin. It's there, it's lurking, it's ready to come out. It's an inherited thing. Like, he has superpowers because his parents have superpowers. Like, this is the inherited nature of the superpowers that he has. So I think it's a good analogy for original sin. And so, yeah, that baby needs a baptism. And the whole demon baby part is one of the things that he's doing that is most worrisome and troubling to the to both Bob, who's trying to take care of the kids at home, and to his siblings that have to kind of take care of him too. So this is, I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. Now, all kind of analogies like this can break down eventually, but, you know, why this kid and not the other ones too, and things of that nature. But Edna E. Mode, the fashion designer, who is suspiciously also like living in a place that could be like a, I don't know, a supervillain's lair. She's very intrigued by the little baby and Jack-Jack, and they get along famously. But she suggests that as he grows, he may grow out of certain powers, and he may like not have as many of them as he has at this young age. But he's a remarkable baby. He just lacks any ability to understand the repercussions of his, you know, laser beam eyes and flammability and all the rest of it, right?
So I noticed that in a lot of the art for the movie, he's got his own little Incredibles mask on. I assume he also has a little Incredibles onesie or something that he wears. Does he join the superhero team to some extent?
Yeah, kind of he does. So that was one of the things that last time we talked about how he was going to have a bigger role in this movie, and he does. That Edna E. Mode, like I mentioned, Edna puts together a little uniform for him in the previous film, actually. And really by the very end of this film, he gets his little mask like the rest of them. But there is this kind of, there's a reality to it in that they have to take care of the baby. Like, they can't all run off and do their superhero stuff and leave the baby completely unattended. In the first film, they had a babysitter, but in this one, it's the brother and sister that are supposed to take care of the kid once the superhero stuff gets going. And you end up, they end up on the adventure with everyone else at the end. And Jack-Jack is there, and he's able to use some of his powers kind of inadvertently to the advantage of everybody. So he's in the mix, and there's, of course, a great fun scene near the earlier on when you're finding out what his powers are, where there's a raccoon in the backyard, and he really decides, I don't like that raccoon, and there's the whole battle between him and the raccoon. So they definitely put a lot more of him kind of moving towards becoming a superhero himself.
Do they set up a third, an Incredibles 3, or perhaps even just kind of the way these things are produced now, one up on top of another, not having to wait 14 years for the next one to come out?
I think so. And at the very, very, very end, at the end, the character of Underminer shows up again. So he's the guy that showed up at the end of the first one and the beginning of the second one here. And then he shows up at the end of the second one. And that's actually voiced by John Ratzenberger, so from Cheers. But he was also Ham in Toy Story. And he's actually been, I think, in almost every Pixar movie doing voice work. So this character of Underminer, you know, at the very, very end like that, again, kind of suggests that they may be carrying on with more of this. Again, all of these things really just depend on how much money it makes in the theaters. And it did make a pile of money this first weekend. And next weekend, though, it's up against Jurassic, new Jurassic Park movie. Although that one's probably a little more frightening for kids than this one would be, although this one has its moments.
Well, that was my final question with about 30 seconds here. For kids, particular the smaller kids, are there going to be some too intense moments?
Yeah, one of the things is that the villain is somebody called Screen Slaver, and that's kind of a mask of its own, I guess. I don't want to spoil everything, but the whole idea is that there's these goggles that get put on both the mother and the father, so Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible, and the goggles have screens in them, and they hypnotize them and make them kind of into bad guys for part of the movie. And for very little kids, like these characters are also mom and dad. So there is something that would be very disturbing potentially for tiny, tiny kids. That whole notion of your parents aren't your parents. This is kind of like an invasion of the body snatchers kind of thing. Now, that's challenging for people, But sometimes, like a little 3-year-old or somebody, or who's never ever experienced it before, this could be very intense and challenging for them. So know your kids and know what they can deal with. But that could be kind of, my parents are my parents is kind of a scary thought.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Incredibles 2 at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Congratulations to Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Chaplain Gregory Todd. Yesterday, he assumed the rank of Rear Admiral Chaplain Corps for the United States Navy. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports almost 200 chaplains who represent the church on active duty, the reserves, the National Guard, and Civil Air Patrol. Learn more about their work at lcms.org/armed forces, serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Pastor Chris Roseborough is going to join us for our weekly feature this week in Pop American Christianity. We're going to talk about miracles while you sleep. Then we're going to play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week. We'll play those four soundbites for you in about a half hour or so. We need your votes, 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org, our Twitter address at issuesetc, or at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come, there is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.